Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We hear it all the time. The federal government doesn't have a tax revenue problem. It has a spending problem. Washington, D.C. is spending way too much money. It's making the next generation of taxpayers, our kids, pay the price. The government is spending is such a problem that we need to cut spending now with a sequester, or else the United States will be the next Cyprus or Greece. Robert Kuttner says that's all wrong, and the politics of austerity is what will hurt the economy, and it already is hurting the economy. He says the economics of front-loading government cuts is a proven disaster. What do you think? Are you happy with the sequester? Do you think there's a double standard in America when it comes to debt, that one standard is for big banks and the other standard is for the little guy? Give us a call, 614-8980. Email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Go to the comments section on our website at tpr.org. Our guest is Robert Kuttner. His latest book is Debtor's Prison, The Politics of Austerity Versus the Possibility. He's also the co-founder and current co-editor of the American Prospect, which is created in 1990 as an authoritative magazine of liberal ideas. Welcome to The Source.
David, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. So, Debtor's Prison, this is about the politics of austerity. So, what are the politics of austerity? What's being proposed?
Well, I make basically two points in the book. The first is that ever since bankruptcy was invented in the reign of Queen Anne in Britain, there's been a double standard for little guys and for big guys. I mean, if you think about it, if a corporation gets in over its head, it can declare Chapter 11 and sail merrily on. And that's not true of students, not true of homeowners. When the banks got into big trouble, the TARP program and then the Federal Reserve took a lot of toxic debt off of the banks' books. So for starters, there's a huge double standard in debt relief. I guess the second point is that, we want prudent standards. We want tight regulations so that banks don't create opportunities for people to get in over their heads, and banks themselves don't get in over their heads. But after a collapse happens, you want debt relief, and that's not the time to tighten everybody's belt, because if you tighten everybody's belt at the same time, people don't have the money to go out into the stores and buy the products, and other people get put out of work. And we've already seen, according to the Congressional Budget Office, that the combination of the effects of the $85 billion sequester, cutting spending by $85 billion this fiscal year, and the tax increase, the two-point tax hike and the payroll tax, those two things taken together are going to cut the growth rate in half this year. So, yes, we need to get the deficit and the debt ratio down, but not, as you said, to front load it. The time to do that is after we get a strong recovery going.
We've heard so much about this study from Reinhart and Rogarth about that you hit a tipping point when government spending hits a certain level, and that if the United States hit its in relations to its GDP, that suddenly you have this tremendous drop off in economic activity, and you'll just fall off the cliff. And that was the justification for a lot of austerity programs coming from Washington, D.C., particularly from the House and the House leadership. Now that study has been discredited. What happened there?
Well, they left out some very important years. They mischaracterized which countries had had what kind of experience, and they got some of their arithmetic wrong. I think the most important error is that the story of what happened after World War II was underplayed. And, everybody correctly points out that the New Deal didn't cure the Great Depression. World War II did, and that's true. I mean, the New Deal got us about halfway out of the Depression, and then along came Pearl Harbor, and unemployment melted away from about 12% on the eve of the war to 2%. I mean, there were shortages of workers once the government borrowed a ton of money to spend on war production. And so because of all the spending on the war, by 1945, the debt ratio was about 124% of GDP, much higher than the Reinhart-Rogoff 90%. But what happened after the war? We had the biggest boom we ever had, and we didn't get that boom by tightening everybody's belt or by having a Bull-Simpson Commission target some kind of debt ratio in 1955, 10 years after the war. No, we doubled down. We doubled down with the GI Bill and FHA loans, and the economy prospered.
But we were also the only country in the world that had any factories that weren't bombed into smithereens.
Well, yeah, but you could say the same thing after World War One, and we really messed up the recovery after World War One because we didn't have any kind of a recovery program. I mean, interestingly, we prospered because we had a recovery program for Europe after World War Two. And if you compare the aftermath of the two wars, they could not have been more different. And so there's more to the story than the fact that we were the only country that had intact factories. My point is we did not pursue austerity, even though we had a much higher debt ratio than the current debt ratio.
And you mentioned the depression, and in fact, it was a double-dip depression. There was a time when it was climbing out of, and there was some economic growth, and then the Washington, D.C. decided to kick in some cutback programs.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there were people just like Mr. Bowles and Mr. Simpson around in 1937, and they persuaded President Roosevelt that, okay, the economy's on the mend, now's the time to tighten our belt. And as a result, the economy went back into a recession, and the recovery that had been stimulated by all that New Deal spending was aborted because they moved too soon to austerity. So I think history is full of lessons on why the time to reduce the debt ratio is after the recovery happens, not when you still have a fragile economy. And even though the measured unemployment rate is improving slowly, if you look at the ratio of working age population to total population, it hasn't budged. It's dropped 6 percentage points. It's stayed 6 points lower than its historic norm. And a lot of people are just giving up and leaving the labor force. So the economy, as I think your listeners will certainly appreciate, still very, very soft. There's been no wage growth except at the very top. And, you know, it's funny. Ben Bernanke is the only progressive in Washington. The Fed is usually very inflation-phobic, but the Fed is the only agency of government right now that's worried about the economy growing too slowly. Everybody else has been infected with austerity fever.
Well, as a matter of fact, didn't the Federal Reserve say that cuts at Washington, D.C. Have hurt? The federal spending cuts is restraining economic growth.
Yeah, the Fed, I mean, it is so remarkably a case of the central bank playing against type. I mean, typically the Fed would rather have a recession than have any slight risk of inflation. And Bernanke's point is that the risk today is deflation, and they put out the Open Market Committee, which sets policy for the Fed, put out a statement last May 1st saying that the danger is not inflation. If anything, inflation is too low, and all these fiscal headwinds are constraining economic growth, and we're going to continue, we the Fed, to have this bond-buying program to try and get something going. So it's almost bizarre for the Fed to be the one that cares about growth and the executive and legislative branches outdoing each other to see who could be the bigger budget cutter in the middle of a soft economy.
Okay, we're going to take a break. The number to call to jump in on this conversation, 614-8980. I really want to hear from folks who say that the government has got to cut spending. And we can have that conversation right now with one of the leading experts saying that's not true. We're going to take a break. The number again, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTN.
You are voting for Obama.
But I'm not here to do Obama talk.
Oh, stop it. You're not here
to be insulted either. You're doing RNC talking points.
These are Hannity talking points.
I write the talking points. Yeah, yeah. Where do you get
Here's
them
where we
from?
Have. You say, you spew this line, DNC talking points.
Stop insulting me or I'm walking
don't
off
curse.
The set.
Go ahead, go.
Are
Goodbye.
You going to let me have
Leave.
My 2 minutes?
I don't care. Go right ahead. Walk off. Yeah, you said the economy is in dire straits.
Him. It is in dire straits.
You're
going to deny that, you fool.
Sir, you fool, you idiot.
You're going to deny that the economy is in dire straits.
Unemployment in this country has been lower than the last four decades. Economic growth in the last quarter was 3.3%. Interest rates, inflation have been lower in the Bush years than they've been in the last three decades, and you are trying to convince the people of America that something is
wrong. Do I get a turn to talk?
Go ahead.
Well, if you can persuade the American people that the average family is doing great, your guy deserves to win the election. But I don't think the American people are that stupid.
Yeah, okay, so you're saying dire straits. You know what? Here's the position you Democrats are in. You got to convince the American people the surge has failed.
Well,
the war is lost.
I'm talking about the economy.
Excuse me. We had record unemployment compared to the last four decades, lower than the last four decades average, 3.3% growth, and you're using the term dire. You've got to convince the American people the economy's in bad shape and the war is lost.
Okay, that's our guest, Robert Kuttner. He was on the program on Fox News, Hannity and Combs, September 2008, and he's our guest now. Wrote the book Debtor's Prison, one of 10 books that he's written, The Politics of Austerity Versus Possibility. So do you remember that being on the program that night, and did you remember it fondly, Mr. Kuttner?
Well, I remember it fondly because of the date. Sean Hannity was trying to persuade me that the economy was just in terrific shape and had never been better, and that turned out to be the week that everything fell apart. It was the week that Lehman Brothers fell apart. It was the week that all of Wall Street had to be bailed out by the Treasury and the Fed. So Brother Hannity's timing wasn't great. The funny thing is, I had written a book called Obama's Challenge, and I was going on the show expecting a book interview with Combs, who was, you know, the mild-mannered guy of the duo, and Hannity tried to ambush me. So I haven't had so much fun in a long time because he was just so off base on the facts.
And I guess the history has proven that you were right.
Well, yeah, this is the worst financial collapse since the Great Depression, and it was literally the Monday of the week that it all came apart that he was trying to tell me how great things were. But, you know, it's a tragedy. I mean, I don't want to gloat about how bad the economy is. I'm just trying to keep the tragedy from getting worse by persuading people that let's wait until things are improving, and then let's worry about the deficit ratio. Let's get some jobs back on board, and then you got a higher growth rate. It's easier to cut the deficit.
Let's get some callers in on this, 614-8980. I know you're out there, the folks who say that the government is spending way too much money and we have to cut back or else we'll be the next Greece. Why aren't we going to be the next Greece? Why is that comparison not a good comparison?
Well, for starters, you know, Greece, I think foolishly, joined the euro. And Greece is much too poor a country to share a currency with Germany, which is the strongest country in Europe. But because Greece joined the euro, Greece loses the ability to devalue, which is what a poor country normally does when its economy gets into trouble. And so Greece is stuck with a very expensive currency and a run on its bonds. And but the United States, unlike Greece, uses the U.S. dollar, and it has the ability to print dollars. And even though you might say, well, it's printing too many dollars, the fact is the dollar is in a lot better shape than any other currency. It's in better shape than the euro. It's in better shape than the yen. The Chinese aren't willing to let their currency be used internationally. And so there's a lot of confidence in the dollar. The dollar is strong. And Greece can't print drachmas, whereas the United States has the ability to have its own monetary policy and its own fiscal policy.
Right. So what are some examples of public policy coming from Washington, D.C. right now that you say is hurting our economic growth?
Well, I think the sequester is a terrible idea. I mean, it's just taking almost $100 billion out of the economy, and the bipartisan or nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office agrees with me on that point. I think the idea of a 10-year grand bargain where the Democrats agree to cut Social Security and Medicare and the Republicans agree to close tax loopholes, and you take $2 or $3 trillion out of the public spending when the economy is still weak, that's a terrible idea. And the austerity is a kind of a failure in theory and in practice. Europe keeps demonstrating why it doesn't work. Europe has had six quarters now of negative GDP growth, and they're trying to tighten everybody's belt. It just doesn't work.
Okay, the number to call is 614-8980. Let's go to the phones. Larry is on the air. Larry, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Yes, sir. I had a comment on the budget or the deficit projections for this coming FY. Last year, we $1.4 trillion in debt, and this year they're looking at the latest projection says $660 billion with a massive, you know, the economy's trying to get started. You know, we're getting the Dow, you know, I know it's totally not tied in, but everything's starting to recover. And I hear what you're saying is if we start pulling back or continue to pull back, we're just hurting ourselves. I see as the economy grows and is growing now, the deficits will reduce naturally. Do you have comment on that?
All right, Larry, thank you for your call.
Thank you. In fact, they just revised the numbers down to about $450 billion deficit this year. They're predicting the deficit, even if we don't have any kind of a budget-cutting deal, the deficit is going to be down to about 2% of GDP next year, which is normal. So let's get some wind in the sails of this economy. And Social Security and Medicare should not be part of this conversation at all. I mean, Medicare has all kinds of problems because of the aging of the population, the invention of new technologies. Medicare needs to be reformed. Social Security is in much better shape than Medicare. We probably need to, change the way we finance it. But you don't want to do that in the context of a rush to cut the deficit because Social Security, is in surplus right now. It's going to be in surplus for several more years. And I think the people who don't like Social Security are using deficit-cutting fever as an excuse to cut back that program. So
is that when we keep hearing about chained CPI for Social Security?
It's a back, think about it. If you're an elderly person, your costs are going up faster than the average person's costs because you're spending so much money on health care. And health care inflation is the one category of inflation that's still pretty serious. And yet they're proposing to reduce the annual cost of living adjustment as a backdoor way of cutting benefits. I don't think benefits ought to be cut at all. I mean,
and also raise the Medicare eligibility age.
Yeah, and half of elderly people depend on Social Security for two-thirds of their income. I mean, I don't know how anybody could claim that Social Security benefits are too generous and need to be cut. So I think it's bad economic policy, and it's also not fair to the elderly to target these two programs for cuts. And, if you think about the argument that we are taking bread out of the mouths of our children by passing along these debts to them, what's really killing our children is things like the student loan program and the fact that there are not enough good jobs out there. If we want to be fair to our children and our grandchildren, let's get a recovery going so that people can make a decent living. And all these cutbacks are going to make that harder.
So when do you pay off the deficit? When do we, get the debt under control?
Oh, I think if you get growth rate back to something normal and unemployment back to something normal, and I mean, 3.5% growth rate and an unemployment rate of maybe 5%, at that point, absolutely, the deficit should be very, very low. It should be 1 or 2% of GDP. And if the economy is growing faster than the debt, the debt ratio comes down.
But we have the political will when the times are good to do those things?
Well, we certainly did in the 1990s. I mean, in the 1990s, times were good, and we got to surplus. We got to surplus in 1999. We had a budget surplus for 3 years. If you looked at the economic commentary in the year 2000, people were saying, what do we do when the national debt's paid off? How's the Treasury going to, and the Fed, how are they going to conduct monetary policy? Because there won't be any Treasury bonds left to buy and sell, because there won't be any national debt. That was only 13 years ago.
Yeah, remember when the big problem was what to do with the peace dividend?
That's right.
All right, I got another caller I want to get on the air. John, welcome to The Source.
My comment is, does it not strike anyone as more than obvious that this entire deficit catastrophe didn't show up until the rich and powerful got caught with their pants down and destroyed the economy, and now they're trying to blame it all on the poor? Oh, it's all those entitlements. Oh, it's all the spending on programs that our party doesn't like. While the one party seems to think it's perfectly fine to give tax abatements and money and this, that, and the other to the rich and powerful corporations that obviously don't need it, I'll take my comments off the air, but it's here we go again down the same old road.
All right, John. Thank you so much. So, I mean, the thing is, people believe that the government is spending too much money. People just believe it, and that's something that it's become part of our political DNA now. And you got quite a job to do to get people to realize that may not be the case.
Well, one of the reasons that people believe it is that so much money has been spent propagating this belief. I mean, you've got the group Fix the Debt. It's corporate-led, spending about $100 billion. And, you know, how about Fix the Student Debt? I mean, it's part of the DNA because so much money has been spent to propagate it. It is difficult to argue the other side because commonsensically people say, well, yeah, the government should live, you know, within its means. But again, just in economic terms, the time to do that is not when you have a depressed economy. And I actually think that by putting Medicare and Social Security on the chopping block, Congress and the White House may have started a backlash. Because even though people think it's an abstraction that, hey, we got to do something about all these deficits, people don't want to see Social Security cut. People don't want to see Medicare cut. And so people have a kind of a split-screen view of this.
All right.
In principle.
Robert Kuttner, thank you. Kuttner, thank you so much for joining us, author of Debtor's Prison, The Politics of Austerity versus the Possibility. We got to wrap this up. You've been listening to The Source on KSTX. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Wayne Coble is the TPR program director. Chris Udaly is our web producer. We get production help from Catherine Dixon. I'm David Martin Davies. Check us out online at tpr.org. The Source is a production of KSTX, Texas Public Radio. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Coming up Monday on The Source, teen pregnancy is a problem for San Antonio. The children of teen moms are likely to grow up in poverty, score lower on math and reading tests, drop out of high school, experience abuse and neglect, and end up in prison. We take a look at teen pregnancy, and we want to hear from you. On The Source, Monday at 3 on KSTX. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the TPR Community Engagement Fund.
Across the country, in rural America, one in two new neighbors is Latino. That's according to a new study, and that's an adjustment for some communities.
I mean, diversity is, if you're Norwegian growing up in a Swiss community, you know, that's diversity. And so they don't have any experience. And so it's not even so much discrimination, but just not knowing, really.
Latinos in rural America on Fronteras, Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KSTX.
There are a lot of things you might want to ask Donald Rumsfeld were you to get the chance. We did. You can hear him next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
You can hear Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on News and Views at 89.1 KSTX, San Antonio.